From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 3rd, 2021. It's the bye week for the Green Bay Packers, and the Bucs have a couple of home games this week. The Miami Heat are in town Saturday, and Cleveland comes to town on Monday. This next story is unbelievable. A cow in Brazil, and I like this already, a cow in Brazil escaped from a slaughterhouse and found her way to a water park where she got stuck on a water slide. How she got to the top of the slide is anybody's guess. The whole episode made the cow famous. She was given a new name and a new deck chair. But most importantly, a stay of execution, which is way better than a lousy deck chair. Thanks to supply chain issues, glass bottles are now in short supply. That's bad news for vineyards and distilleries and me, because I'm kind of a snob when it comes to wine in a box. A resident of an assisted living facility in South Carolina needed to dry out his bullets. That's right, he needed to dry out his bullets, so he put the wet ammo in a toaster oven. Fortunately, no one was injured in the kitchen fire. A Florida psychic was recently arrested for the third time. She probably should have seen that coming. And finally, a goofy headline of the week is from the Express Times in Pennsylvania. Homicide victims rarely talk to police. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty hard to top what you just started with. Well, folks, we gave up a few nickels this week. NASDAQ shed 2.6%, losing 406 points to close at 15,085, still up almost 18% for the year. S&P 500 shed 1.2%, losing 56 points. Closed today at 45.38. Broader markets still up a nice 22.5% year-to-date, including dividends. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 320 points this week, down 0.9%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 34,580. Dow still up 15% for the year. You know, Kyle, you look at the yield on the 10-year Treasury now, down to 1.34%. Pretty interesting that the big money doesn't feel like inflation's much of an issue. Big money's clearly showing that maybe we'll get two rate increases next year, maybe three, but probably two, according to the futures market. And I feel, you know, in the intermediate term, that'll serve as fundamental support for stock prices.
You know, Bob, I think it's a little bit of a reprieve for bond investors as well that had faced some pressure from rising rates earlier in the year. Now we've seen them kind of stabilize and even come back down a little bit. And so as we look at kind of what I think is an outlook for bonds that certainly will see potentially a couple of rate increases, but which isn't maybe quite as gloomy as what some had been predicting earlier, I think all the more reason that that balance we talk about all the time remains the right place to be.
Stocks got roughed up this week, started the day after Thanksgiving, had a little bit of a reprieve yesterday, lost some ground today. Fairly common after such a huge run-up for the markets this year. A lot of investors are starting to peek into next year already. Most of the financial results are baked in the cake, as they say, for this year. About everybody's going to hit their most current numbers. And as a result, you know, the big money looks into next year and tries to, you know, align their dollars with their viewpoint. A lot of the forecasts for next year aren't all that great. And I think that's common after a huge run-up in stock prices. Keep in mind, everybody, that so many of the forecasts are so wide of the mark that you hardly want to pay attention to them. Pretty difficult, maybe even impossible, to call short-term directions in stock prices. We know, of course, that longer-term stocks do pretty well. Short-term, pretty hard to call.
Yeah, Bob, amid all the volatility we've seen the past few days, you had BMO come out today with a pretty rosy outlook for stocks for next year. And I think it's always interesting when you get this wide range of forecasts. It tells you just how difficult it is to really pin down what the next year really is going to look like. And I think maybe a fool's errand in so many ways, right? That I think better to understand what the risks we face are, better to try to digest what that might mean for stocks in the short term. How we prepare for the short term, then again, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that balance, it seems to be the piece we come back to. But I think, you know, really what it's saying is that longer term, we should be pretty optimistic. It's just that, you know, there are some concerns lately that we need to get through.
You know, and Kyle, just getting back to the 10-year treasury for a minute, earnings yield on the market with a forward P at 21, you're looking at a 4.75 earnings yield. And, you know, I said just a minute ago that the yield on the 10-year is down to 1.34. Here's the point, folks. 4.75 is a bigger number than 1.34. So as long as you have a significant gap between the earnings yield and the bond yield, the stocks tend to do fairly well.
Yeah, we don't immediately have to see that price-to-earnings ratio come back down to average because it's supported by those lower yields in bonds. And so I think one of the concerns that we had had as we looked forward was if rates needed to move significantly higher or if rates were going to move significantly higher, it changed the math a little bit, right? That 2 or 2.25 on the 10-year looks a little more attractive relative to the forward earnings yield of the S&P 500. But with the 10-year coming back down a little bit, now all of a sudden, you know, those more elevated valuations that we've been talking about for a while, they seem a little more appropriate. They seem a little bit less stretched than what we otherwise would have thought. And so I think it'll be a pretty important relationship to keep an eye on, especially as we see, you know, those likely 2 Fed increases next year, what that might mean for the yield curve in its entirety, right? What it might mean for longer term rates. But you know, I think I'm pretty encouraged by the fact that we've kind of settled into a pretty narrow range now for the 10-year, and that's, you know, significantly below that 1.65 or 1.7 that we'd been dealing with for parts of the summer.
Kendall, what's your take on the markets these days?
Yeah, I think the the interesting thing, if you hopped onto any one of the big financial websites today, was the jobs report that came out. And a lot of them, you know, had that negative connotation. U.S. only added 210,000 jobs, and Kyle Forded did a great article in the New York Times that talked about, well, if you dig a little bit past the surface, there's a lot more within the jobs numbers to be optimistic about, right? Unemployment rate came down 4.2% from 4.6. We're getting back up to close to pre-pandemic labor force participation rate, still a little bit shy of that number being 63.3% of February last year, up to 61.8%. But I think there is a lot of optimism if you just look at some of the other things other than just the jobs report numbers itself, right? One of them being that you're seeing signs of a tight labor market starting to ease possibly, and I think people are thinking about whether or not they want to go back into some of those lower paying jobs in, you know, hospitality and the food industry when they can go make 5 or 6, maybe even more money in a warehouse job. So I think there's plenty to be optimistic about. I think, you know, so often we see these websites hit those flashy headlines of, you know, jobs reports disappoint, but, you know, it just goes to show if you dive a little bit deeper, there's more to be excited about going forward.
Arthur, what's your take on what you've seen this week?
Yeah, I think this is a week in which obviously volatility came back into play, and it's a warning to anyone who thinks that it's easy to be a successful long or short-term investor. I mean, when you look at things, we got clobbered last Friday. The market recovered on Monday. We got clobbered on Tuesday and Wednesday. We recovered on Thursday, and then we got clobbered again today. So the lesson is quit paying attention to what's going on a day-to-day basis. Lengthen your horizons, have a balanced portfolio. If you have any concerns, call your investment advisor. And by all means, listen to this podcast every single week. And that'll give you some good long-term perspective. But the reasons for the volatility, you really have to consider. We've got a new variant. We didn't like the first two, so here's another one. And the market abhors uncertainty. You've got investors who are concerned. You've got investors who think, oh, we'll get through this. And so you have to realize that over short periods of time, you know, the market's going to go up and down. Over a long period of time, as Bob and I have discussed, you know, frequently, I've been here 30 years. There's only been three major bear markets in the past 30 years. Our clients have all made money over long periods of time. And as Bob suggests so often, quit looking at your stocks as something you need on a daily basis. You know, it's your fixed income, which is going to be important to sustain, you know, what you need to live on a regular basis. So just get on the bus, leave the drive-in to us. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you, Art, for that. Joel, you had a number of reports that came out this week. A couple caught my eye. Kendall talked about the Labor Department report. Institute for Supply Management came out with their manufacturing number up to 61. That's pretty encouraging.
Bob, the Institute for Supply Management came out with two reports this week, the manufacturing one, which looks good. I mean, it's been very strong. They even found that there might be some improvements in their labor situation, you know, which Kendall alluded to is hard for a lot of employers. And they're also seeing signs that some of their suppliers' delivery problems might be getting better. So those are things that we're all talking about, worrying about for the causes of inflation. The services report that the ISM came out with reached a new high as far as how fast that sector of our economy, the biggest sector, is growing. And there again, they're sort of having problems because the demand is faster than they can keep up with. But it's the fifth month in 2021 that they broke a record as far as the pace of how much they're expanding. And just to sort of build on kind of what Art was saying about COVID and what Kendall was saying about jobs, we're still 3.9 million jobs short of where we were in February 2020, 1.3 million jobs short in leisure and hospitality. So that's a third of all those jobs. You can point to an industry that's very affected by COVID, by the pandemic. And then if you add in education and healthcare, it's more like two-thirds of all the jobs that we're missing during the pandemic are jobs that, you know, where workers are facing people. And so you can understand that there's still some hesitation to go back to work, and some places aren't even open yet.
You know, I read the other day, Joel, that they think up to half of the people that didn't go back to work did so because of the lack of childcare, that we're just in a childcare crisis now in the United States because of COVID. But that's what they think, is half of the people that didn't go back to work did so, stayed home because they couldn't find somebody to watch the kids.
It makes sense. I mean, there's been talk of a she session that you know, it's really affected women workers, and especially if they have families. I saw somewhere today that one of the few groups that didn't expand in employment last month were African-American women. So that's sort of speaking to what you're saying there.
Kyle, as we look towards the end of the year, I think it gets important for people to, start looking at the next year and get a sense of what's probably going to do pretty well, what's not. I think based on the direction of interest rates, I think it's kind of encouraging for growth stocks. Most people know that interest rates go up, growth stocks don't do as well as value because of discounting future cash flow by higher interest rate to get to present value adversely affects companies that are gushing cash, the Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Netflix, Facebook type of companies. So maybe it's going to be closer to a horse race between value and growth. But I'm so struck by how strong the economy is now. And it's just important not to lose sight of that. You know, when you look at factory orders up the 17th time in 18 months, you look at the manufacturing numbers, the service numbers, I mean, let alone retail. I mean, it's pretty clear that people are spending a whole lot less on going out to eat, staying in nice hotels, resorts, theaters, concerts, even sporting events. But they're spending more on retail. You know, I read not too long ago that retail's up 18% from pre-pandemic. The last time retail jumped that much was when the troops came home from World War II. So, I mean, it just hardly ever happens. And that's not slowing down much. You know, so you want to get a sense of what's going to happen next year? Just think all the retail spending that's going on, and people are acting like, all right, I'm going to spend it somewhere. You know, we used to joke that a lot of people just couldn't take looking at their ratty couch anymore and bought couches. But it's a spread to so many areas, and that's just impressive.
And I think what adds to that is this fact that we've done this amidst what's been a pretty significant supply chain disruption. There just hasn't been enough of what people want to buy out there. And so there is, I think, a significant amount of pent-up demand. And as we continue to resolve some of those issues, as we're better able to move shipping containers through the system, as there's more incentive for that to get done, I think you're putting more product on the shelves that can now be bought. And so as you look at some of those retailers that we talked about, and granted, a lot of it's been online spending with the Amazons of the world, but there are plenty of retailers that are figuring that out as well. And so as you look at, you know, opportunity for next year, economic strength is certainly supportive of those retailers. I think the other thing it's very supportive of is what we have seen more and more of in response to this supply chain disruption, and that is that there's a number of industrials, a number of manufacturers that are very, very well supported by economic growth. You're seeing, I think, pretty strong growth in semiconductor plants here in the U.S., spending billions and billions of dollars to get new semiconductor plants up and running. Those are all things that are directly tied to some of the problems that we've seen in the pandemic that long-term lead to what I think is some pretty strong growth opportunities for businesses here in the U.S., for workers here in the U.S., and especially, I think, for economic growth long-term. Those are all the things that kind of fuel, you know, economic growth that feeds upon itself, not just with that one-time spend when the government or a local government supports some of that manufacturer spend, but when it ultimately then starts to feed on itself as those workers buy more product, as they make more money. You know, those are all, you know, positive cyclical things.
And certainly to the extent that a lot of companies are rethinking their supply chain commitments and trying to figure out how to buy within the United States so they have a better sense of control over the supply chain, I think that's great for the U.S. economy moving forward.
I couldn't agree with you more there.
When you look at the stock market, you know, it's important for us to point out that stocks have rarely been this expensive. So we're enthusiastic about the next couple of years. But it's important for us to point out, everyone, that there's only been two times in U.S. history where stocks were more expensive than now, 1929 and 1999, and neither one of those ended well. Of course, it's different this time relative to interest rates. Interest rates are still very, very low. And yes, it is all about earnings and interest rates. And with earnings looking pretty good here next year, and interest rates still fairly low, I think you can support higher multiples, in English, higher PEs for the market moving forward as long as the rates stay down.
I keep a long list of risks on my desk as of things that we need to pay attention to as investors, and valuations are at the top of that list because every other risk feeds into that, right? If we get a new variant like we saw, you know, announced last week, it's the higher valuations that make stocks more susceptible to decline then, right? If stocks are already cheap and we get a piece of bad news, there's not as much selling that can take place. And so and I think those stretched valuations, those high valuations are the thing that most concern me. It's the reason that I'm most reserved in kind of my expectations for the future. But at the same time, you know, we talk about all these positives. There's plenty of things that support those higher valuations that we talked about. We talked about lower interest rates. The other one is the dependence that we've had upon growth stocks has been supportive of businesses with higher profit margins. And it's not one that gets talked about often, but higher profit margins also support higher valuations. You're buying businesses that make more money on every sale, and so you'd be willing to pay a little bit more for that. And so I think plenty of reasons to think that the old 16.5 or 17 forward PE average for the markets is maybe a little lower than what we should expect for the future. You add in where long-term rates are, and I think, you know, there's plenty of reason to think that while we may still be a little elevated in terms of valuations, there's more support there than what many are willing to recognize.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.